KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
People in China have erupted in protest over the country's restrictive zero COVID policies. This is what the streets of Shanghai sounded like on Sunday from ABC News. And CBS News reports that the public outrage is making an impact.
Phone footage shows ranks of riot police in white hazmat suits holding plastic shields advancing on protesters in the southern city of Guangzhou last night. Hours later, officials abruptly announced that the lockdown was being lifted in several districts and that mass COVID testing will end.
What sparked these protests? What effect are they having in China and internationally? What does it say that the Chinese people are speaking out publicly against President Xi Jinping?
For the sake of the global economy, if China wants to maintain its role in the global supply chain, there has to be a working solution that balances human well-being and China's ability to continue to be part of the global economy.
Our guest today on KYW News Radio In Depth is Dr. Rosalind Shea, Associate Professor of Political Science and Global Studies at Temple University. We have seen these sustained protests in China for a significant amount of time now. What's kind of, for people that aren't familiar, that maybe have just seen headlines, what's at the heart of this? How did this start? Why did it start?
Yeah, thank you for that question. The protest, I would say the proximate cause of the protest was just the population's reaction to several events that had occurred most recently. Namely, there was a bus full of people that were on their way to the quarantine. And this is, of course, China's zero COVID policy. And there was an accident and people died on that bus. And then more recently, last week in Xinjiang, there was an apartment fire that authorities weren't able to get to because alleged of COVID policies, the COVID lockdown policies. So these draconian policies implemented by the central government, but then, of course, enforced by the subnational local governments for essentially the last 3 years since COVID outbreak in early part of 2020. And so these are the kind of the proximate causes that has since become so much larger and so much bigger because of issue linkages, other issues concerning just discontent in general, particularly from the youth. And so we are seeing unprecedented, since Tiananmen Square back in 1989, unprecedented groups of youth joining via social media what is now have become a much larger scale protests that are happening across the country. But at the same time, we should also note that because of the government's firewall of China and control of information dissemination, not everyone is privy to what is going on. You know, certainly the media isn't reporting what is going on. But at the same time, the central government and subnational government officials are taking note. They scaled down or softened some of the rhetoric and supposedly implementation of the zero COVID policy going forward.
The zero COVID policy, which it sounds like we could kind of tie everything in one way or another back to these tragedies you talked about, tragic ripple effects of people tired of these draconian policies. It's basically that they just want to eliminate COVID-19. Like zero COVID means that any case is too many cases. And it just seems to me that is that's not living in reality when you're dealing with a virus. Hasn't the central government, haven't they set themselves up to fail using zero COVID as kind of the bar of success?
Yeah. And, you know, from kind of the perspective of the rest of the world, it certainly does sound amazing even that the government think that it is possible, right? That it is possible to keep infection rates to essentially nil. And but the idea indeed is to have the lowest number possible of infections and to do so through quarantines and periodic long-term quarantines. And, you know, China has a decent rate of vaccinations, but decent rate of vaccinations with Chinese-made vaccines. And so China has, in many ways, relied on self-sufficiency, even on the COVID solution. The government has not permitted other vaccinations that are known to work, right, around the world. And also the vaccination rate among the elderly is quite low. And so as a result, you also have a very low degree of natural immunity after 3 years. All those factors together, the path dependency of that, bring us to what we're experiencing today for the populace and the frustrations that have mounted up. And then you combine that with frustrations of a political consolidation that the Chinese Communist Party has adhered to in the just most recently at the National Party Congress. And so in many ways, there's a confluence of these different factors coming to a head.
How much of this is one party rule where people are just so used to being told what they want to hear and actually believe that they can do this because there's nobody that's willing to step up in the room and say, this is not realistic and it's going to cause more problems than it solves? Is this kind of one of the offshoots you see of an authoritarian government trying to, you know, just kind of, you got a hammer, everything looks like a nail, and we're going to make it work whether you like it or not?
Yeah. So, a lot of Communist Party cadres, members don't have incentive to go against the party. They don't have incentive to go against the party at every level of the party, right? From the very grassroots village town level to the very top. And when you have Central Party Committee at the very top consolidated to be the most loyal members of Xi Jinping's faction, then what you have is this manifestation where there aren't many different channels of even party members with authority to express frustration or just express something that is different from a central level policy. And much of that actually played out in the world's view, as you might recall from the headlines of the last month.
There's also the ripple effects that this, I would imagine, is having on the Chinese economy, because if you're going to do these draconian lockdowns, people can't go to work. Or we've also seen, I think, people that have been forced to stay at work. You know, they expect them to just sleep there and, because they don't want anybody going anywhere and a chance to spread the virus. And it just seems to me, if people are frustrated with the lack of mobility, they're frustrated with not being able to go out. And then if the paycheck isn't what the paycheck is, boy, you're just almost asking for a popular uprising, because there's nothing to hang your hat on.
Yeah, indeed. And, I mentioned earlier that the proximate causes were these two incidents, right? The bus and the apartment fire. But really, throughout the pandemic in the last couple of years, there have been worker protests. And so actually, in the background of these most recent causes, we've had worker protests across sectors, from textiles to iPhone manufacturing. And what happened was these workers have had mandated stoppages over time. And these stoppages, on one hand, one could argue is to protect the workers, right? You don't want to, and definitely to also not spread COVID. It's in the name of the zero COVID policy. But, it could be helpful to the workers and their families. But when this happens again and again, and it's a top-down mandate, workers they're not receiving their wages when they're not working. Their mobility is limited. They are not allowed to move about. And when this happens so often and so periodically, then you have these protests at the factory level. These are protests that then are very localized and also situational, of course, that have since become much more widespread, as I said, in response to what the population is, their own frustrations, and also these other two horrific incidents.
I've heard in reading about the coverage that there's actually been some chants or some outcry that, you know, people want Xi Jinping, the president, to resign. I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but having that type of talk is, you know, unheard of in China. You mentioned earlier they kind of say they've loosened some of these COVID restrictions in some places. Is there long-term concerns if you're the Chinese government of what these could mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that even if and likely the Chinese government will come down hard and suppress even more wider spread protests, this will leave at least one generation, couple generation of young people who have had this experience, right? Have had this experience of being frustrated with the government and having seen some response to it. And so, of course, this will always have then impressions on the psyche going forward. Now, in terms of what it means for the party, it is still a one-party state. And in many ways, the party have enjoyed performance legitimacy in terms of, you know, Chinese economic development, right? We very briefly touched upon economics at least at the individual level, but on the economy-wide level and for China's development, many Chinese and including the young people are quite prideful and proud of how far China has come, right? To number two economy in the world and to have these indigenous industries. And so in many ways, there have been pride, national pride, but the Communist Party in some ways now would have to respond to the lasting effects of the protests that are happening. I do say that for any within the very top of the party that might have dissented from Xi Jinping's policy, some of the softliners of the party might now have more backing for. If they dissent any or even just disagree a little bit from Xi Jinping, they may now have more leeway to say, hey, you know what? We don't want those protests to happen again. So, you know, from the very top, there could be some softliner, hardliner type of dynamics that we see. But then again, we've also have the loyalists that are surrounding Xi Jinping. So you know, I think this is something we definitely, the world should be watching. And for the masses, I think this definitely does have some, will have ripple effects. But that information, that control of information dissemination is real. And there are large portions of the population that probably don't have no sense that this is even happening. With the Chinese government's ownership and control and management of telecommunications infrastructure, you know, one thing going forward that could happen if this becomes even more widespread and some of the softening of policies doesn't work, then it would be possible for the telecommunications infrastructure to be shut down. In fact, that has happened. It has happened in localized manners before with past protests, whether it's protests against chemical runoffs, you know, environmental degradation, or protests, you know, anti-Japanese protests that are nationalist in nature that the Chinese government, you know, have allowed in the past, but then, you know, due to foreign relations reasons have to suppress. There have been times in the past, even before Xi Jinping, where the telecommunications infrastructure has been shut off. We haven't seen that yet, but I do believe that is a tool in addition to surveillance that the government has in its toolbox of repression. On the note of the economy, if I may speak a little bit. So in some ways, in the last 3 years, some of these work stoppages that have been mandated in the name of zero COVID policy have also been not evenly applied. In my own work, I just came out with a new book, Microinstitutional Foundations of Capitalism, Sectoral Pathways to Globalization in China, India, and Russia. In my book, in my China case studies across industries and the economy, what I have found since the beginning of 2020 is that for the most strategic sectors, the value added tech sectors with applications for national security and contribution to the national technology base, telecommunications, for example. Some of those factories, that particularly ones that are Chinese owned, have continued to churn along. They are important for China's role in global supply chains. You know, semiconductors, they are the backbone of the telecommunications industry. And so those factories are allowed to, and actually mandated to continue to produce. Whereas other factories have had to endure stoppages along the way periodically in the name of zero COVID policy, which are also some of the sources of frustration that have bubbled up.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Temple University Associate Professor of Political Science and Global Studies, Dr. Rosalind Shea, right after this. This is KYW News Radio In Depth.
A Philadelphia dentist today was sentenced to 22 years in prison and fined $100,000.
This was just unbelievable.
You got to understand the genius in Larry. Nobody was doing coke at this point.
No one could believe that this highly educated, young, handsome man was this kingpin drug dealer.
This is Wolves Among Us, the Larry Lavin story, a documentary podcast from C13 Originals, a Cadence 13 studio. Listen now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back on KYW News Radio In Depth, continuing our conversation with Temple University's Dr. Rosalind Shea. And I think I know the answer to this, but I'll ask it anyway. Is the Chinese government responsive to other governments saying, hey, you might want to go with a little bit of a lighter touch, you know, or would specifically like the U.S., if anybody pushed on that, would it make them dig their heels in harder? Or do they frankly just don't care?
You know, I do think that China is cognizant of the fact that in terms of global output market share, it is 3/4 of the world's manufacturing categories tracked by the United Nations. And that's across sectors, apparel, pharma, chemicals, computers, you know, electrical, industrial equipment, and so forth. It controls 80% of the world's refining and mining of raw materials for key industries, such as electric car batteries. So China plays an important role in the global supply chain. And so in that sense, it wants to maintain that. Now, of course, we also know that for national security purposes, even for the United States and other countries, there have been concerns about the role that China plays in global supply chains. And so I think in many ways, global economies and countries around the world want to see China succeed in terms of coming up with a solution that works, where any loosening or softening of the zero COVID policy will not decimate the population, right? You know, for all those factors of less natural immunity, not having access to effective vaccines and so forth, an immediate loosening can have, you know, detrimental effects. At the same time, for the sake of the global economy, if China wants to maintain its role in the global supply chain, there has to be a working solution that balances human well-being and China's ability to continue to be part of the global economy. That said, we are all, you know, there are also concerns at the Chinese government, its authoritarian government, and the role it plays in terms of repressing its population and you know, intervention in Hong Kong institutions, the use of Uyghur labor in Xinjiang province and so forth. Those are concerns, the paramount goals of self-sufficiency and building security industries to aid in the continued human rights violations, the continued resilience of the Chinese Communist Party, those are all issues and concerns that the world leaders have to take into account in terms of interacting with China and in terms of, you know, how to respond to what is going on in China today and how to interact with Chinese leaders in terms of making sure that the Chinese response to the widespread protests is one that is humane and one that accounts for the human rights of the population.
Would the Xi Jinping regime ever admit it was a mistake? Would they ever come to the people and say, we felt that zero COVID was the best policy, but given everything, we may not have been correct and going forward X, Y, and Z? Or would that be looked at as weakness and would be more detrimental to the government than any kind of protest? I don't know. That sounds a it sounds a little Pollyannish, but I wonder if showing that type of a rethink might get them a lot of political capital with a lot of these people that are just incredibly frustrated.
Yeah, I don't think the government will come out outright and admit that this was a mistake. This, you know, we should not ever have had this policy in the first place. I think there might be some shifting of responsibility to subnational governments. I think there might be some rationalization that this policy, given China's circumstances, had to happen, but that it wasn't enforced properly at the subnational level. You know, prior to COVID, the central government, as I've mentioned before, have enjoyed some legitimacy. And a lot of that has to do with this kind of dance of responsibility shifting. It's about how the subnational government has, you know, implemented or enforced our policies. And so I do see that dynamic potentially happening. But to outright admit that this might not have been the best solution to eradicate COVID, no, I don't see that happening.
And my final question, given the consistency of these protests, how widespread they are, you and I are having lunch 3 years from now. What are the chances that we say, wow, November, early December of 2022, that's when it all started to change in China? Or do you think this is more likely a footnote and that it continues business as usual? The government navigates this, either drops the hammer or it burns out. Or do you think there's a possibility here that this is the ember that starts to open things up?
Yeah, that's $1 million question, right? So given, you know, my own research and my own work, seeing what Xi Jinping has done since 2013, in many ways, conventional wisdom is that he centralized political control. He has even centralized any of the economic market openings. But the reality is a lot of the re-regulation that we have seen really has occurred immediately since 2001, China's membership into the World Trade Organization. Slowly and surely, in the most strategic sectors, the government had centralized economic management and economic control of market entry, you know, business scope, investment level, you know, the use of Chinese standards and so forth. So for companies that have operated in the most high-tech, strategic value-added sectors, a lot of the re-regulation that has occurred since Xi Jinping came into political power in 2013 really has something they've been seeing slowly happening for the last 2 decades. It's not new and wasn't new to Xi Jinping. I think what Xi Jinping has done is to further centralize political control into not just the Chinese Communist Party's hands, but his own hands. And so I lay out this institutional foundation only to say that, you know, state market relations now is really tightly in the Chinese Communist Party's hands. The technological telecommunications infrastructure and you know, the tools for authoritarian resilience, the tools are available to the Chinese Communist Party. And so what we have is an environment where in many ways the Chinese government can continue to maintain and retain political power. in spite of what we are seeing today. And so 3 years from now, I see potentially maybe a doubling down rather than a political opening. With that said, it's in the psyche, right? Even as much as the Chinese government wanted to suppress what happened in 89, and many of the young people today don't know or don't have very clear ideas what happened in 89 or even the Cultural Revolution. It's still in the psyche of individuals and families. And so what would that mean, you know, going forward beyond the 3 years, I think is something that the world should be watching.
That's it for this episode of KYW News Radio In Depth. You can listen to the podcast free anytime on the Odyssey app, and you can find it wherever you listen to your favorite shows. I'm Matt Leon, and we'll have another episode out soon.